You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace through conversations with innovators, educators, and decision-makers, people with solutions to today's workforce challenges. Joining me today on Work in Progress is Tamar Jacoby, President of Opportunity America. Tamar, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you for the opportunity, Ramona.
I would love for you to explain what Opportunity's mission is, what you guys are doing. So for people in the audience who don't know about it, I'd love them to learn a little bit about it. What I've learned is great.
Well, you're too kind. We're a policy and research shop based in Washington, D.C., but with a national scope. The way I think about our work is I feel that workforce education, career preparation, CTE, whatever you want to call what we all work on, we're in a really exciting time in that field. The last 10 years have been a time of amazing innovation and creativity and ferment. But it's still sometimes, my metaphor is Silicon Valley in the late 70s or early 80s. There's a garage on every corner. There's innovation happening all around us. It's very exciting, but it's still early days. And there's room for a catalyst to help advance some of that innovation, lift up, find the better mousetraps, lift up the better mousetraps, connect the people that are making the better mousetraps to each other, and make room in the policy world so that these better mousetraps can flourish. And that's what we try to do. And we're not the only organization like that. I dare say you could describe yourself the same way. But we do everything from kind of research to convening to policy advocacy to, technical assistance. We're small and lean and mean and nimble. So we kind of pick our where we think we can be strategic and go there.
For those who are not in the field, when you talk about CTE, is this what we used to call vocational training?
It is, but this is what's so interesting is in the vocational training used to be looked down upon. It used to not be very good. It used to be a second tier opportunity opportunity is too nice a word for it. It was a second tier, track really, where we sent students of color and sometimes less able students and others. The last 10 years or so have seen a real reinvention of what we've renamed career and technical education. I usually use the term workforce preparation or job focused education. And there are two things here. There are two important things. One is that the economy is really changing so that, we talk about the future of work. It's not the future of work. It's been going on for two or three decades, four decades in some industries. Manufacturing's had the future of work since the 1970s. That automation and intensifying of the workplace, change in the workplace, means that everybody needs more skills. And the person with the PhD needs a postdoc, the person with the bachelor's needs a master's, and the person who used to get by in high school really needs some kind of post-secondary education or training, or even, better preparation in high school for the world of work. And that demand, that need for change in the world of education, post-secondary education and training, has spurred a lot of innovation. And so, the old voc ed was kind of a sad story. And, in some ways, for some decades, maybe we didn't need it as much as we do now. We now need it. You used to be able to get a job at the Ford factory with only a high school education or less than a high school education. You didn't even need to speak English, and you didn't need technical skills. There are not too many well-paying jobs in America anymore for people who can't speak English and don't have some kind of skill.
I think what's interesting about that, too, is that it's expanded, as you said, technology and the skills involved with that. It's not just in building computers. You need it in healthcare. You need it in manufacturing.
And you need problem solving also, right? So once upon a time, most of the workers in most companies, did what the boss told them to do. And they didn't have to do a lot of problem solving. And the orders came down from on top. organizations are much more horizontal today, and everybody needs to do problem solving. I mean, I've been thinking a lot about manufacturing lately, and I mean, you need to be a very independent, autonomous, critical thinker, problem solver to succeed in manufacturing today. And that's a challenge for a society to get everybody to the level where they not only have some kind of technical skill, but they also have these broader, really, communications, critical thinking, problem solving, teamwork skills.
You just released a new report that looks at one of these training programs through a community college with manufacturers. Tell us about the program and what have you found in terms of its success rate?
Yeah, so this is, the program is called FAME. That's short for Federation of Advanced Manufacturing, Federation 4, I guess, Advanced Manufacturing Education. It originally started, it was Toyota and a couple of other companies in Kentucky. Now it's nearly 400 companies nationwide. It's like an apprenticeship program in the sense that, doesn't call itself an apprenticeship program, but it's like an apprenticeship program in the sense that the students spend part of the day in the classroom or part of the week in the classroom and then part of the week on the job. But it takes that classical apprenticeship model and it adds some really interesting twists to it. One of the twists is that the learning goes on at a college, but who's really organizing the initiative and who's making the decisions and picking the students and picking the curriculum and making sure it works are these employers who really are kind of in the driver's seat. I mean, a lot of community colleges have partnerships with employers, but it basically means that the employers come to a meeting once a year and the college doesn't really listen to the advice. In FAME, the employers are driving it. That doesn't mean it's just training for one company. You learn how to be a technician in modern advanced manufacturing, but it means that you're definitely learning the skills that employers need. And when you come out, those employers are going to be standing there ready to hire you. That's the first innovation that FAME puts on top of a classic apprenticeship program. And the second innovation is that, speaking to what I was, relating to what I was just speaking about a minute ago, problem solving, critical thinking, only one third of the program is technical. Two thirds are these other skills. One of those thirds is sort of standard work ethic, show up on time, stand up straight, look people in the eye kind of skills. And the third third is critical thinking, problem solving, communication, learned through lean manufacturing principles largely. And these technicians come out, just extraordinarily well equipped for what's needed in modern manufacturing. So our study, that was my hypothesis going in, was that they come out well equipped. What our study did was look at what they earn. And what we found was that after 5 years, if you compare FAME graduates with other vocational education, CTE graduates from the same community colleges, the FAME people earn 80% more, $45,000 more a year. I mean, that's a pretty amazing pay premium. And the study also included, I mean, they're more likely to graduate. There are a lot of other data we have, but the real, oh my gosh number is the earnings.
I had the opportunity to observe firsthand the FAME program in St. Charles, Missouri, and met some of the people going through the program. And what I really appreciated about what I saw was that they were of all ages. It wasn't just someone right out of high school. I met a young woman who I think she was 39 and she had two children, and she had gone from working in a retail cashier role to training to this, and then she had a family sustaining payroll afterwards. Yep. And that, I think your report is bearing that out, that this now becomes this kind of earn and learn program. She really got the experience she needed. She got a job and she was able to raise a family on that in the community where she was living. So I the local part of that, I think, is really important as well.
Yeah, no, I agree, and the other piece of our study is relevant to that. We looked at this data about earnings, and we had state data for that, but we also did our own survey of graduates. And 230 graduates responded to an online survey about what they thought was, you know, how, you know, we asked them, look at these amazing results. You're earning so much more. What's the secret sauce? You know, what does the program do that's good? And they all talked about this, the earn and learn component. What was really interesting was they were very high job satisfaction, you know, 80-90% thought it was a great program, would recommend it highly to their friends, et cetera. 97%, I think, would recommend it highly to their friends. But what was really interesting was the older students and the ones who were in some ways less well prepared for a community college degree were the ones who got the most out of it. So they all said they were more like 10 percentage points more likely to say, this was really the right decision for me, and I would recommend it strongly to a friend, and I'm now, you know, very satisfied on my job. And, you know, the program bills itself as being primarily for traditional college age students, but my takeaway was it is for traditional college age students, and it's great even for the people in the top third of their high school class. You know, they appreciated it too. But the people in the middle third, the people who enter older, the people who never thought they'd go to college, they get a lot more out of it. And the reason they do, I think, is because they have this experience on the job that helps them, gives them a way to enter into the classroom learning. There are often people who before said, like, why do I care about math and why should I sit in math class and I'm bored with this and that teacher's lecturing me? Suddenly they care about the topic because they just did it yesterday in the factory and they need a little help figuring it out. And so, it's just, you know, this is one of these happy circumstances where you think a program is good and you look at it a little, you know, more closely and actually it does turn out to be really good. It's nice to do a paper like that as opposed to the other way around.
So this sounds that the conclusion out of this would be, we have to figure out ways how to scale this, you know, nationally. How do we, you know, it's already in 13 states, but how do you show people that this apprenticeship model works?
Yeah, so I mean, the big drag on apprenticeship, right? Trump and before him Obama and lawmakers in every state, everybody kind of has gotten the memo about apprenticeship, and they are all working hard and have been working hard to scale it. You know, Obama spent about $250 million. Trump has spent $1 billion. Every state in the nation has, you know, something advancing apprenticeship. The obstacle, the main sort of, you know, bottleneck is getting employers to buy in and to sponsor it. And there's reasons for that. It's expensive and it's employers have to, you know, it takes time and money and effort and resources at the company, and it's a commitment on the company's part. And the U.S. tries to advance apprenticeship mostly through programs that have a lot of government involvement, and a lot of companies don't like that. So the message is, you're right, we need to scale this. In my view, it's that we need to scale it. It's about showing employers the benefits, helping them get started if they need that kind of help. You know, maybe cutting away some of this regulation that makes it unappealing to employers. And I think, you know, we all talk about apprenticeship. What's the beauty of the FAME model? I mean, what FAME teaches me, I guess is a better way to put it, is that it's the principles of the thing that are important. So, you know, FAME is, yes, a 2-year program. FAME involves a community college, but the key is the earn and learn training. And, you know, if in a different occupation, maybe you don't need 2 years. Maybe all you need is 6 weeks. And nobody would call that an apprenticeship, a 6-week program. But what's important is the earn and learn training. What's important is the soft skills. What's important is the employer involvement. And what's important is the job waiting, the clear target, job waiting at the end. If you do this right, you will land in a job. And those components can also be advanced separately from advancing the whole apprenticeship package.
So when you look at the role a community college plays in this model, is it evolving or has it always been there?
Yeah, so traditionally in America, apprenticeships were very much focused on blue collar trades, and there was not community colleges doing the education, and nobody was thinking about people getting degrees. Apprenticeships were often run by labor unions, and they had their own people doing the instruction. I don't know who offered instruction if it wasn't a union, but this has not traditionally been linked to a, you know, institution of higher education. That's a new development. You know, it's a promising development because we also want people to get degrees if possible. That's a good thing. It's a work in progress.
So what is your reapproach to how we should be reimagining the role of community college, or how has it been reimagined?
Community colleges are an amazing institution in American life, right? There's 1,200 of them all across the country. There are as many people in community colleges as in four-year schools. I think many of your listeners may not know that. It's not just some little thing over in the corner. It's as big as the four-year sector. There's hardly any place in America where you can't drive to a community college in half an hour. I mean, maybe somewhere in Montana or something, but not too many other places. But they're a mixed bag, right? They've had kind of an identity crisis over their lives. They're not sure if they should really be institutions that prepare people to go to four-year schools, you know, basically a cheaper stepping stone to a four-year school, or whether they should really be about preparing people to go to the workforce, or whether they should be doing, you know, a bunch of other things like, you know, hobby, like French cooking classes for people in the neighborhood. And so they've had kind of an identity crisis. Their graduation rates are very poor. Many of them have a kind of, you know, oh, poor little redheaded stepchild, me attitude, but they have great potential. And some of them have been realizing this recently and innovating. And the potential is they all have quite a lot of experience. Even if they poo-pooed it and thought of it as kind of second tier, most of them have quite a lot of experience getting people ready for the workplace. Most of them know employers. They can innovate a lot faster than four-year colleges generally, and they have the infrastructure. They're all over America with buildings and machinery and labs and now online capacity. And now that the nation needs this new, you know, that the future of work is requiring this new, you know, large scale education and training for people who aren't going to get bachelor's degrees, community colleges are the obvious institution to do it. But they do need to, many of them, do some work to bring themselves, you know, to adapt to that role, to sort of shake off that identity crisis and embrace a new role as we're the institution that's best positioned to prepare people for the workforce. And it doesn't mean we're not going to send people to a four-year institution. The best way to prepare them for the workforce might be to prepare them for a bachelor's degree. But we're going to focus on what our region needs economically. We're going to make sure everybody has some kind of job skills when they graduate, even if they think they're going to a four-year college, and we're just going to make that much more our mission and wear it more proudly. And this isn't just my vision. This is, you know, I'm crystallizing, I think, a vision that a lot of people hold for community colleges that I've tried to play a role in crystallizing and articulating and getting out to the world and, you know, finding a receptive audience, because there are a lot of people in the community college sector who would like to take on that role as well.
Is there an effort to get state and local leaders, industry, to get together with the community colleges to create credentialing that can signal to employers that I've gone through this program, I have these skills, and I know these are the skills that you need in your community for the jobs that are available?
Yeah, well, this is America, right? So nothing happens, very little happens on a one-time centralized, it's happening everywhere scale. That's good and bad, right? In Germany, like, the government would decide and then we would have a credentialing system tomorrow. In America, it's 1,000 flowers blooming in a lot of different places and we're moving toward a credentialing system. And that, again, that's good and bad. A lot of institutions are doing what you suggest. A lot of trade associations are working to develop credentials that reflect what employers need. Industry certifications are generally called. A lot of colleges are adopting them. A lot of states are creating incentives for colleges to adopt them and funding and kind of screening systems so we can figure out which ones are valuable and which ones aren't. There's a lot of activity going on around it. There's still a lot of work to be done. There's the furniture store says, it's a big country. Somebody's got to furnish it. It's a big country. It takes a while for an innovation like this to kind of roll over the country and take root everywhere. But that is certainly happening, just what you described.
You know, I have my own personal obsession that there are a lot of good things happening in terms of helping job seekers, job holders find the right skills they need for jobs that are going to provide a good pay, they're going to provide upward mobility, economic mobility, but that there's a lack of communication out there to people in the communities that, hey, this exists, we can help you. Is there any part of your policy or think tank that is trying to help get that word out there?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you I do try to do that. That is part of what we see as our role. I mean, we just published a major report that was, again, not a product of my thinking necessarily, but we convened a group of thinkers, both bold-faced name education reformers and people on the ground, from on the ground at colleges that are instituting some of these innovations. And we spent a year together thinking through what should the role of community college be, and came up with a report that is both a call to action and a very detailed, you know, if you want to improve this part of your community college, try these steps. But that's just a paper. I agree with you that what's needed is more cross-pollination between states. Many states have no idea most states have no idea what other states are doing, and many colleges have no idea what other colleges are doing. And I mean, I would have thought that this was more, you know, people, all the organizations that we all pay attention to, the alphabet soup of organizations, have conferences where part of what they try to do is disseminate best practices, but somehow there's still a big space to be filled of disseminating best practices and connecting people with each other. And I'm not, you know, my little organization alone, we do it. I'm constantly giving talks in one state where I bring someone from another state and explains what they're doing. That's not the scale that's needed to really create the connections that are needed. And I think, you know, you're right to pose the challenge. We all need to be thinking harder about that.
And I also would like to challenge local media to think about something other than if it bleeds, it leads, and talk about what can make your community stronger.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, but it is hard. You know, I'm a former journalist myself. It's hard to make this stuff sexy enough for the newspaper. I mean, I'll just say that. You at Working Nation do a great job of making it appealing, but, you know, I used to work on immigration. And when I worked on immigration, I was on TV, you know, at least once a week. I don't think I've ever been on TV since I started working on workforce issues. And it's just not, you know, people think of it as process. And they think of it as, you know, how a school works, who cares? You're right. If you start to talk about why is it important? It's more appealing, but it can be awful hard to get media attention for this kind of stuff. And hard for the media to play the role of, you know, if what we really need is cross-pollination between states and colleges, that's not really a role for media. You know, there's too much nitty-gritty explaining that has to go on there.
Well, I'm going to still make it my mission. Tamar, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. And I would urge everybody to check out this new report on FAME, and you can find it on our website.
Thank you for the opportunity, Ramona.
My pleasure. Thank you. I've been speaking to Tamar Jacoby, president of Opportunity America. This is Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim. Thanks for listening.